won the hits 5 seconds of Summer with Easier. We also heard Katy Perry, Chained to the Rhythm. So last time I checked, she was still pregnant. She hasn't gone into labor yet. I'm keeping an eye on her. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto, Mario Ritter Jr., and Brian Lynn. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Pete Musto.
Insurance companies are creating products for a world where health emergencies could become the new normal after many businesses struggled during the COVID-19 crisis. New insurance policies designed to guard against events like the coronavirus health crisis might cost a lot. But they offer businesses, from restaurants to film production companies, ways of protecting against work stoppages and losses if another virus strikes. The providers include big insurance companies and individual brokers adding new products to existing coverage. There also are niche players, businesses that see a chance to fill the space left by major insurers that liken pandemics to wars or nuclear explosions. For example, a Massachusetts-based company called Machine Cover aims to offer policies next year that would give help during lockdowns. Using computer software and other data sources, the company measures traffic levels around businesses such as restaurants, stores, and car dealers. If traffic drops below a set level, Machine Cover provides the business it insures with financial support, whatever the reason. That way, the effect of a decrease in business activity is reduced. The Reuters news agency spoke with Inderjeet Gujral, the company's creator. This is the type of coverage which businesses thought they had paid for when they bought their current business interruption policies before the coronavirus, he said. Machine Cover receives support from insurance provider Hiscox and individual investors, mostly from the insurance and private investment world. This month, the mayor of Miami-Dade County, Florida, Carlos Jimenez, ordered local restaurants to close a short time after they had reopened. As a result, the restaurants are now struggling, notes Andrew Giambarba of the Insurance Office of America in Doral, Florida. He wrote insurance policies for restaurants that did not get federal aid when the coronavirus forced their businesses to close. Every niche that is dealing with insurance that is affected by business interruption needs every new product they can have, he noted. Pandemic exemptions have helped some insurers remain financially secure, while the insurance industry has largely resisted pressure to provide more coverage for virus-related losses. In fact, some insurers that paid out for event cancellations and other losses have removed pandemics from their coverage. Last week, British Risk Management Group, AIRMIC, said that the pandemic was partly responsible for a lack of basic insurance at a reasonable cost. AIRMIC added that most of its members we're looking at other ways to reduce risk. Recently, Lloyd's of London insurer Beazley PLC started selling a policy to insure organizers of online music, cultural, and business events against technical problems. These events depend completely on the technology working, and a failure can be financially crippling, said Mark Simons, who works for Beazley. Since businesses are only now learning how disease outbreaks can affect them, some new insurance products are specially made. Elite Risk Insurance in California has been offering COVID outbreak relapse coverage since May. The policies are meant for businesses forced to close a second time, said Jeff Clyde, Elite Risk's creator. The policies are designed around individual businesses and only pay out when one or more conditions are met. For film and television production companies, that could be when an actor gets the virus, forcing them to stop filming. Such policies are costly. A $1 million policy could cost about $80,000 to $100,000, depending on the terms. The insurance is costly because it covers a risk that does not have a historical basis for calculating the price, Clyde says. Some insurers are also working on changes to employee pay and health insurance plans. With millions of workers not expected to return to offices anytime soon, some companies in Asia are preparing insurance policies to protect them from hardship. I'm Pete Musto.
The fast food company Burger King wants to change the way cows eat in an effort to limit climate change. The restaurant chain said it is adding a different plant called lemongrass to the diet of cows that provide meat for the restaurant group. The fast food chain announced the reduced methane emissions beef Whopper on Tuesday. The hamburger is made with beef from cows that release less methane gas, the company says. The burgers will be available in Los Angeles, Miami, New York City, Austin, Texas, and Portland, Oregon, for a limited time. Burger King is also testing an advertising campaign that it hopes will persuade buyers that the company cares about the environment. The social media campaign includes a child dressed as a cowboy singing about cows and the environment. The campaign also uses terms some people consider vulgar to describe the release of methane gas. The company, best known for the Whopper hamburger, worries the public may disapprove if it does nothing to fight climate change. A recent public opinion study by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research suggests the company might be right. It found that 2 out of 3 Americans say corporations have a responsibility to fight climate change. Burger King said Tuesday it believes that adding lemongrass to the cow's diet can reduce methane by about 33%. Methane is a carbon-based gas that is released when organic material breaks down, such as during digestion inside animals. Scientists say cows release a lot of methane as they digest grass and other plant material. Methane is also considered a greenhouse gas, meaning it can trap heat in the atmosphere. The Environmental Protection Agency says greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture made up just under 10% of total U.S. emissions in 2018. Methane from cows made up about 1/4 of that amount. The Associated Press reports that Burger King worked with scientists at Mexico's Autonomous University of Mexico State and the University of California, Davis. The researchers added 100 grams of lemongrass leaves to the cows' daily diets. In early tests, they said the addition caused the cows to release less methane. 2 years ago, competitor McDonald's said it was taking steps to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. At the time, the company said changes to the way it made Big Macs and quarter-pounder hamburgers could cut emissions. McDonald's said the move would keep 150 million tons of methane out of the atmosphere by 2030. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Comets are solar system objects made up of ice, rock, and dust. Right now, a newly discovered one is speeding by Earth, providing excellent light shows for the planet's people. The ice rock is called Neowise. It is the brightest comet to appear above the Northern Hemisphere in 25 years. Social media users in many countries have posted images they captured of Neowise as it lit up the sky over their heads. Comets are normally about 8 to 16 kilometers wide, but as they travel near the sun, they heat up, releasing gas and dust. The comet expands to form a glowing head that can be larger than a planet, says the U.S. space agency, NASA. The process also creates a sunlit tail of dust. It can stretch for millions of kilometers behind the comet. Scientists say Neowise is believed to be about 5 kilometers across. It passed inside Mercury's orbit on July 3rd, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory said in a statement. The close pass by the Sun was cooking the comet's outermost parts, causing a major release of gas and dust material. And yet the comet has managed to survive this intense roasting, the statement said. The comet was named for NASA's NEOWISE Infrared Space Telescope, which discovered it in March. The NEOWISE project aims to search the skies for what scientists call near-Earth objects, or NEOs. Such objects include asteroids and comets that could come within 50 million kilometers of Earth's orbit. In this case, NASA said NEOWISE would pass by Earth at a harmless distance of 103 million kilometers while giving astronomers a good chance to study its substance and structure. Sky watchers may be able to see NEOWISE as it passes through the inner solar system. But its nearness to the Sun could make sighting it difficult, NASA says. Experts say people in the Northern Hemisphere, the part of Earth above the equator, should look toward the northwestern sky, just below the Big Dipper star group. Until recently, the best time to see NEOWISE was about an hour before sunrise. This week, the comet began making its appearance in the evening sky shortly after sunset. People have been able to see the head of the comet without the use of equipment. But devices like binoculars and telescopes are better for viewing the comet's long tail. NEOWISE is expected to be seeable across the Northern Hemisphere until mid-August. It will then start making its way back to the outer parts of the solar system. NASA says it will be about 7,000 years before the comet returns. So I wouldn't suggest waiting for the next pass, said Joe Massiero of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Astronauts on the International Space Station caught a good look at the bright ice rock last week. NASA's Bob Behnken captured an image of NEOWISE and shared the picture on social media. It shows Central Asia in the background and part of the space station in the foreground. Stars, cities, spaceships, and a comet, Behnken tweeted from orbit. I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Grover Cleveland. When Americans remember him, it is mostly because he makes writing presidential timelines difficult. Cleveland was the nation's 22nd president, and also its 24th. He remains the only U.S. president to date whose second term did not immediately follow the first. Cleveland is also notable because of his personal life and because he held office during one of the country's worst economic crises. Stephen Grover Cleveland was born in the northeastern state of New Jersey and grew up mostly in New York. He was a middle child in a family of 9 children. His father was a minister, and the family did not have much money. As a result, Cleveland had little formal education. He was one of the few presidents who did not go to college, but he was able to become a lawyer. He earned enough money and developed a good professional image. In time, he became a sheriff, a mayor, and the governor of the state of New York. In his early life, Cleveland did not marry and have children. Instead, he had many friends with whom he enjoyed hunting, fishing, and eating and drinking in restaurants. But Cleveland did have a relationship with a widow named Maria Halpin. She became pregnant and said Cleveland was the baby's father. Cleveland said he was not sure if he was. However, he gave the child some financial support, the name of one of his closest friends, and his own family name. The child was called Oscar Folsom Cleveland. Shortly after the boy was born, his mother was sent to an institution for the mentally unstable. Doctors quickly confirmed that her mental health was fine, but her son was taken from her and raised by another family. The story about Halpin and the child became an issue in the election of 1884. The Democratic Party had nominated Cleveland as their candidate for president. In general, voters liked his message of limiting federal spending, reducing the power of wealthy interests, and stopping political corruption. Some called him Grover the Good. But Cleveland's opponents said his history with Maria Halpin showed that he was an immoral man. At anti-Cleveland rallies, Republicans chanted, "Ma, Ma, where's my pa?" Pa is another word for father. But Cleveland did not comment much on the matter. His defenders said Cleveland's honesty as a public official was more important than his bad judgment as a private citizen. Voters seemed to agree. Cleveland narrowly won the election. His supporters answered the Republicans' chant of "Where's my pa?" by saying, "Gone to the White House, ha, ha, ha." Grover Cleveland's presidency was unusual because he did not want to use the office to propose laws. Instead, he mostly aimed to keep the federal government operating efficiently. He also wanted to limit lawmakers' power to help special interest groups. As a result, Cleveland vetoed many bills in his first term. He set a record at that time for saying no to proposals from Congress. One of the few ideas that he supported was reducing tariffs. Many of his fellow Democrats liked that idea too, but a number of Republicans did not. In the next election, their candidate, Benjamin Harrison, defeated Cleveland. Cleveland returned to being a lawyer in New York. In 1892, Cleveland was chosen to run against Benjamin Harrison again. The tariff issue returned. The Republicans' protective tariffs had hurt some industries, and voters answered this time by voting Harrison out of office. Cleveland returned to the White House, but this time he was not alone. Two years into his first term as president, Cleveland married the daughter of his close friend, Oscar Folsom. The bride's name was Frances Folsom. She was 21 years old at the time. The president was 49. Cleveland was not the first president to get married while in office, but he was the first one to be married in the White House. The event captivated the public. What's more, Americans adored the new First Lady. She was known for being social, charming, and beautiful. Historians conclude that she was the most popular First Lady since Dolly Madison. She remains the youngest. When the Clevelands returned to the White House, the country was entering a severe economic recession. Some of the country's biggest businesses were failing, including a railroad and many banks. As a result, investors withdrew their money from the stock market. The withdrawal caused many other businesses to fail. The series of events is known as the Panic of 1893. Soon, more and more Americans were out of work. Many could not afford houses or food. Some begged President Cleveland to intervene, but he declined. He did not think it was the role of the federal government to create jobs in order to reverse the Depression. However, Cleveland did use the power of the federal government to intervene during a famous labor strike. In that event, workers in Chicago who helped keep the trains operating walked out of their jobs. They were protesting a major decrease in their pay that did not include a decrease in their living expenses. Since the owner of the company also controlled the price of housing and food, workers appealed to him to treat them more fairly. But the company owner refused even to meet with the workers. Soon, the workers' boycott grew. Workers at other rail yards stopped working. Farmers could not get their goods to market, and others could not get the supplies they needed. Even the mail stopped being delivered. So Cleveland sent federal troops to break the strike. In the short term, Cleveland's actions worked. The trains moved again, and both the courts and most of the public agreed with the president's decision. But in the long term, Cleveland's handling of the panic, depression, and workers' strike lost the support of many voters. At the next opportunity, they voted him out of the White House again. Cleveland returned to New York and later settled in a large house in Princeton, New Jersey. There, he wrote, made speeches, sat on corporate boards, became a trustee of Princeton University, and enjoyed the respect of the people who lived in the town. He died at age 71 of problems with his stomach, heart, and kidneys. Several people said his final words were, "I have tried so hard to do right." Then and now, many people agreed with that idea. Cleveland was generally an honest man who worked hard and tried to act independently as president. But he is not considered one of America's best leaders. He did not have a clear idea about how to guide the country. Yet the opposing party, at least, may have considered Cleveland's presidency a success. After Cleveland's final election defeat, six of the next seven presidents were Republicans. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.